We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
مصر تحتفظ لنفسها بحق الرد وبالأسلوب والتوقيت المناسب للقصاص من هؤلاء القتلة والمجرمين المتجردين من أبسط قيم الإنسانية. ولقد دعوت مجلس الدفاع الوطني للإنعقاد فورا وبشكل دائم لمتابعة تطورات الموقف.
That's the voice of Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi pledging resilience in the fight against extremism after militants in Libya released a video showing the mass beheading of Coptic Christians, 21 in all. The two questions that loom in my mind here is, why are they doing this? Both, why are they executing Christians in this graphic way? Why are they releasing videos to show the world that they are executing Christians in this way? And the big question that obviously looms behind all of that is ISIS, the Islamic State, is it in fact Islamic? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Tuesday afternoon, the 17th of February. David Wood joins us. We're going to be talking with him about the beheading of these 21 Coptic Christians in Libya by the Islamic State. A little bit later, Pastor Tom Baker will be with us, as he is every week. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson today in Mark chapter 5, Jesus healing Jairus's daughter. You can join us as well for the next hour with questions, with comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email right here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at issuesetc. Or our beloved on-demand listeners, you want to join the conversation whenever, wherever you listen, 618-223-8382. That's the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. David Wood is host of a live talk show called Jesus or Muhammad. He's been in more than 40 moderated public debates with atheists and Muslims, and he has authored the cover story for a recent Christian research journal titled, Is the Islamic State Islamic? David, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, how's it going, Todd?
Going well. Why are they doing this in two ways? Why are they both beheading Christians en masse? And why are they releasing videos so that the world can see that they're beheading Christians en masse?
Well, I actually think of several reasons for them to carry out the beheadings from an Islamic perspective. One, as you pointed out, they are Christians, and in chapter 9, verse 29 of the Quran, Muslims are commanded to fight Christians and Jews until we pay the jizya and find ourselves subdued. So Christians are to be fought until we submit to Islamic rule and pay jizya, which is basically tribute money in acknowledgement of our inferior status. So one, ISIS could be doing that, fighting to subjugate. In other words, they're killing these Christians as part of an ongoing fight that will eventually lead to the subjugation of other Christians. Other Christians will give up resisting Islam and will submit to Sharia. Another perfectly valid point from an Islamic perspective is that chapter 5, verse 33 of the Quran says that the penalty for making mischief in a Muslim land is to be murdered or to be crucified or to have body parts chopped off or to be exiled. And the reason that's important is that according to Muhammad, it's not just the people who go out and make mischief in the land, like foreign soldiers or things like that. It's a vague crime. It just says those who make mischief in the land. But when we talk about what it is, according to various Islamic commentators, Ibn Kathir, for instance, says that even unbelief is a form of making mischief in the land. And so there are various penalties for this, again, this vague crime of making mischief or causing problems in a Muslim land. But bringing a military presence or interfering in the government would would be an extreme form. So this would definitely be a death penalty. The problem is, according to Muhammad, it's not just the people who cause the problems or who make the mischief in the land. It's anyone who supports them, anyone who supports them financially. So if you put that together, you can understand a lot of terrorism. You can understand the 9/11 attacks. You can understand these beheadings in the sense that the penalty for governments who take action against, you know, the Islamic State, whether that's the United States or Great Britain, or I mean Egypt is even dealing with ISIS on the Sinai Peninsula. The penalty for governments who take a stand against a group like ISIS is death. But anyone who supports those governments is guilty of an equal crime, because the government couldn't be doing it if they didn't have funding for people who pay taxes or who just in general support the government. And so if you're a Coptic Christian who is an Egyptian, and these guys were Egyptians who went to Libya for work and so on, if you are part of Egypt and you do not submit immediately to ISIS and you support the government and you pay taxes and things like that, then you're under a death penalty. So there are a variety of, and you know, it could just be, you know, just flat out terrorism. We're going to send a message to the world. And, ISIS has said that. And so there are all kinds of reasons for beheading, people, like these cops.
So that leads to the second part of my question. What message are they sending by releasing this as a video on the internet for everyone to see?
Well, you know, terrorism sort of has two sides. One, it can enrage people against you. People can really get upset and want to go back. And you saw this reaction in both Jordan and in Egypt, that both the Jordanian government and the government in Egypt launched attacks based on the burning of the pilot, the Jordanian pilot, and the killing of these cops. So on the one hand, terrorists can enrage, but the Islamic view is that you will eventually break down people's will to resist you. And this Muhammad said he had been made, this is a quote from Muhammad, he said, "I've been made victorious with terror." So it's basically, hey, you know, we'll keep fighting you, we'll keep slaughtering, we'll keep doing public executions. And Muhammad carried out public executions and public beheadings as an example for those who would resist him. So you want the message to spread. You want this to get out there. You want these you know, grand spectacles. And this was the same thing with Al Qaeda. You want a 9/11. You want some tremendous statement. One, because it sends a message to the unbelievers, this is what's going to happen if you interfere with us, if you get in our way, we're going to do this, and you don't like this. And two, it's great recruitment for like-minded people. I mean, there are tons of terrorist groups out there. If you're the one who's getting all the attention in the media, then, you know, if there's a like-minded person, whether, you know, here in the United States or in Great Britain, who you know, believes that Islam commands, you know, waging war against the unbelievers and establishing Islam and establishing Sharia, and you're wondering, hey, who should I join here? Well, if ISIS is the one in the media, then that's a, you know, that's the group to join. And that's why even a couple months ago there were over 1,000 people per month traveling from foreign countries to go out and join ISIS. And so they're you know, despite the airstrikes and the deaths that are resulting you know, from the airstrikes, ISIS is still growing, and I mean they're expanding into other countries now.
How would you describe ISIS to someone who's just woke up out of a coma and hasn't been paying attention for the last year or so to the news? They ask, what is the Islamic State, with no prior knowledge? How would you describe it to them?
I don't think I could describe it without describing the ideology of you know, that underlies it, which would, I'd have to explain that there is a religion out there, and that in this religion, jihad proceeds in stages. I'd have to explain what jihad is. It's, you know, it can take various forms, but that, you know, terrorism and jihad are all part of a plan, and that according to this plan, it sort of operates in stages. When Muslims are in a small minority, when there's, you know, they're just 1 or 2% of the population, the message is preach peace and tolerance, promote peace and tolerance, and, you know, your message is, hey, let's all get along. later, when you make up 15, 20, 25% of a population, you can't subjugate the unbelievers, but you need to, if you can defend Islam from criticism or from, cartoons now, or launch terrorist attacks to protect the Muslim community, then you can do that as long as you're in a place where you can actually defend yourself by these attacks. And still later, once you form a majority and you can actually subjugate a population, then you have to do that. And so I would explain those beliefs. And of course, explain that there are differing degrees of how seriously people can take it. Some people will take this very seriously. Other people won't take it seriously at all. And so you have different kinds of Muslims. You have Muslims who would be some of the nicest people in the world, but you have Muslims who are taking these commands very seriously, and so they're going to do what it says. And so what they're told is, when you're in a minority, peace and tolerance. Later on, when you can fight, you fight, but it's defensively. When you can fight offensively, you can actually go out and subjugate a population, subjugate unbelievers. You have to do that. And so there are Muslims who take these commands very seriously, and they're doing what they are because they believe that they are now in a position to actually take over countries, that Muslims are in the majority in these countries, but these Muslims have been sort of lulled to sleep by other influences, and so they need to get back to real Islam. They need to get back to Sharia in order for Allah to bless them and bless their work and help them carry out their goal of subjugating the entire world to Islam and Islamic law.
So, what is that final goal look like? I mean, subjugating the entire world to Islamic law and to Islam. What is the? I mean, paint a picture for us. What's the end game of a group like ISIS? What do they imagine? What do they dream of?
Well, this comes from Muhammad himself, who said that he's actually seen a vision of the entire world, and that Islam ruled over everything he's seen. And basically, Christians and Jews who fully submit are allowed to remain Christians and Jews, provided they don't resist anyway, they pay the jizya, and they don't get out of line. They can't display, they can't wear a cross, they can't, be singing too loud in their churches and so on. But if they fully submit to the rules, then they are allowed to remain Christians and Jews. Other groups, polytheists or atheists and things like that, they would be given the option of being killed or converting to Islam. But if Islam were to do what Islam calls for, then you would have Muslims in control, enforcing Muhammad's rules about how to deal, and there's all kinds of details you could go into on what Sharia is going to be. But basically, Muslims are going to be in charge. Christians and Jews are going to be able to remain Christians and Jews as long as they understand that they're second-class citizens. Other groups would have to convert or die. Women would be horribly oppressed. You can get your husband can beat you for pretty much anything he wants to beat you for. It's basically look at what ISIS is doing right now and, carrying it through to its logical conclusion on a global scale and imagining, what life is going to be like. And then you have pretty much, that's Muhammad's goal. If you read the Muslim sources, that's what Muhammad envisioned.
Practically, has there ever been a case where Islam has gained that kind of majority in any country and permitted Jews and Christians to continue to hold to their religions and live in peace as long as they completely submit outwardly to all of Sharia law? Has that ever actually worked out?
There's Muslims and Christians and Jews have lived in peace in various times. Some of the times, though, I can't say that it's actually. I mean, it was kind of the result of a more liberal Islamic government that didn't care too much about, strictly enforcing Islam. And that's the case today in places like, Egypt and so on, where, cops aren't forced to pay the jizya and things like that. But during the time of Muhammad, there were instances. For instance, Muhammad conquered the Jews of an oasis called Khaibar, and, their women were taken captive and so on. But the Jews were allowed to live there, provided that they paid 50% of their annual crop produce in exchange for not being killed. So that's part of the basis of the idea of jizya. You're paying your tribute in order not to be killed. So even during the time of Muhammad, Jews were allowed to live and to remain Jews And, you know, as long as they kept their end of the bargain, they didn't resist Islam in any way, they didn't criticize Islam in any way, as long as they kept paying the money. So they were allowed to live for a time until later one of Muhammad's companions, Umar, expelled them because Muhammad said he wanted all the Jews and Christians from the Arabian Peninsula expelled. But, you know, there are instances in time where it was actually where it was actually carried out.
Ken, listening in Florida, has this to say, David. He says, our State Department apparently has attributed these barbaric acts to poverty and lack of economic opportunity. How dangerous is it for our country not to identify the underlying theological cause?
It's horrible. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, that's the leader of ISIS, the guy has a PhD in Islamic studies. He's very educated. Osama bin Laden was a multimillionaire. If you look at who's going there, you have a mix. You have very educated people. You have people with PhDs. You have very wealthy people who are funding it, paying for the weapons and so on. So you have a mix. And so the what we should ask here is, if it's really just poverty and lack of education and things like that, that should be the uniting feature, but it's not the uniting feature. If you have, you know, multimillionaires and people with PhDs in the ranks, what's the uniting feature? And the uniting feature is you basically got two. One, you have a conviction that Islam commands them to do this, and two, you have sort of a character trait that I'm going to obey God, you know, I'm going to obey God no matter what he says. In other words, you know, some people can recognize, hey, this is what Islam is teaching, but they don't have the resolve to do whatever it says. But then you have other people who say, look, if this is what Islam teaches, this is what I'm going to do. And those are the people who are running out to join ISIS.
Finally, then, the average westernized Muslim, and I'm sure that you have encountered many of them in the course of your debates with Muslims, they probably watch the news and are personally as aghast as anyone else seeing the ISIS videos of the beheading of Coptic Christians, giving them the benefit of the doubt. What would you say to them after an event like this becomes so public?
Well, I would say, hey, I'm glad you recognize that this is horrible. But at the same time, this is what Islam commands. So, I recognize the revulsion at these acts. But, you know, I can't pretend that Islam doesn't teach this. I would try to actually point the person away from Islam. I would say, look, I know you think Islam is peaceful, and it's because the reason westernized Muslims believe that Islam is peaceful is because of those three stages I mentioned. This is based on the life of Muhammad. When Muhammad was a persecuted prophet in Mecca, he preached peace and tolerance because that was what was in the best interest of the Muslim community. And so there are verses of the Quran that are from this time when Muhammad's outnumbered and he's preaching peace and tolerance because he would have been crushed if he'd have tried to terrorize anyone. There are verses, peaceful verses of the Quran revealed during this time. And westernized Muslims, they look at those verses and say, you see, here's what Islam teaches. It teaches to you be your religion and to me be my religion. And so it teaches these peaceful things. That's what real Islam is. So obviously ISIS is violating those commands when, you know, they really haven't put it together. That it depends on what situation you're in, and that later when Muhammad was in different circumstances and he had soldiers around him, then the message of Islam changed to Surah 9, verse 29, fight those who do not believe in Islam. Here you're commanded to fight people because of their beliefs. And so I point out, look, if you're really appalled at the actions of ISIS, guess what? That's the sort of thing Muhammad called his followers to do when they're in a position to do it. Not always, but when they are capable of doing so successfully, they're commanded to do that. And so the things you see ISIS doing, the beheadings and so on, that's exactly what Muhammad and his companions did. So if you're appalled at this, you need to rethink whether you should be calling yourself a Muslim.
David Wood hosts a live talk show called Jesus or Muhammad. He has been in more than 40 moderated public debates with atheists and Muslims, and he's authored the cover story in a recent Christian research journal titled Is the Islamic State Islamic? You'll find a link to his website, Answering Muslims, at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. David, thank you very much for being our guest.
All right.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker is going to be joining us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, as we do with him every week. One of my favorite Bible stories. From Mark chapter 5, Jesus healing Jairus' daughter. We'll be right back.
Substitute Organist Service, aptly abbreviated SOS, really has come to our rescue.
Pastor Jim Hollowatch of Christ Lutheran Church in Jackson, Mississippi.
With the ever-growing shortage of skilled musicians in our community, we were approaching a real crisis. But thanks to the Substitute Organist Service, help is always just minutes away. With its easy, intuitive interface, friendly customer service, and outstanding musicianship, you really couldn't ask for more.
You can find out more about the Substitute Organist Service at churchmusicsolutions.com.
Christ Lutheran is a welcoming congregation in Rochester, Minnesota, providing traditional liturgy and hymns, word and sacraments. Call 507-289-0271. That's 507-289-0271. Or visit ChristRochester.org. Christ Lutheran Church, receiving and sharing Christ's mercy.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Steadfast Lutherans. People who believe the law condemns everyone and should be preached to the fullest. People who believe the gospel is for everyone and should be preached to its sweetest. Traditional Lutheran doctrine and practice deliver every Sunday this law and gospel, that Christ was crucified for us sinners. To all who received him, who believed in his name, the Gospel of John says, he gave the right to become children of God. To see how Steadfast Lutherans preserves this good news for everyone, visit steadfastlutherans.org.
Here's Eric listening in Chicago. Hi, Eric. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say I really encourage people to give to Issues, etc., as it's the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the world, I'd say, on the media.
Issues, etc. is listener-supported, and you can support the flagship of confessional liturgical Lutheranism in the media by making a secure online donation at our homepage, issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support.